The News Round on Off The Ball.
With Gillette. We don't just play the game, we change it. Gillette. Made of what matters.
This is News Talk.
Hello there, you're very welcome along to Monday's Off The Ball. Really good lineup for you this evening. We have Emmett McNamara, the Limerick man who won the Epsom Derby on Saturday. We will have Paul McGinley this hour on Bryson DeChambeau, who is changing golf as we speak. We have the Connacht coach with us, Andy Friend, will check in as training ramps up in Galway. They're into week two of a kind of return to normality. And then Pat Nevin with us as well. Jack Grealish, the most fouled player in the league. Not a good thing, says Graeme Souness. People disagreeing on that. We'll get Pat's thoughts. As a jinky winger who drew fouls, I suspect, in his day. And meanwhile, Mason Greenwood, it turns out, is very, very special. 18 years of age and making it look far too easy. 53106 is the text number. We are at Off The Ball on Twitter. As usual, Richie McCormack, hello to you.
Hey, Joe. You well?
Very well, very well. Nathan Murphy, hello to you.
Evening, Joe.
So, Paul McGinley on the way this hour. This is one of the stories from the weekend, amongst other things. We'll get onto the football in a moment. But Bryson DeChambeau, I suspect you were keeping an eye on this last night. Nathan, he is now up to 10th in the world, final round 65. He's won the Rocket Mortgage Classic, which is a so-so PGA Tour event. But he has been in frightening form of late. He's six consecutive top tens. But more to the point, the reason he has been the talk of the golfing world is that over the last 9 months, Bryson DeChambeau has put on 3 stone. Now, some people have said 3 stone of lean muscle. It ain't all lean muscle. It's 3 stone. Some of it muscle, some of it just good old-fashioned bulk and timber. But the net result has been that just this week alone, he averaged 350 yards off the tee all week. So nobody has averaged 350 yards off the tee ever. This is a record. This is a new frontier for golf. Across the season, he's averaging 320 yards, which puts him very much first in driving distance. The interesting thing, really, Nathan, is he has looked into the science of all this. He's a smart fella, scientifically minded, and decided bulk was the way to go. Gone away and done it, re-emerged as a kind of Hulk-like figure. And the results are stunning, really. I mean, he's added about 50 yards to his game.
It's insane what he's done over the past 6 or so months in terms of extra length and the way he's performed since he came back out on tour. He's a brilliant self-publicist. You're talking about him there in a way that I don't think you could talk about many other golfers and how much you know about him. He's brilliant at getting his message out there. So when he first came onto the tour, he was this mad scientist with all his clubs the same length. And he turned up on a green one day with a compass in his hand and made sure everybody saw it. And everyone was intrigued because he was different. And there was a general shrug of the shoulders towards him from the other players as to, again, an outsider in golf, someone who does things slightly different, is never overly welcome. But I think most golf fans found him quite interesting and found the fact he was going about golf in a different way quite fascinating. And this is just another step up again. And it's going to be so interesting to see what happens over the next 6 months, whether he can keep this going. A couple of years ago, he did go through a similar really hot spell where he won 4 times in as many months and then had a little bit of a dip. But to sit down, and he spoke about this towards the end of last year, that he was going to come back as a different player. I don't know if people fully expected to come back physically as such a different person. His neck is twice the size it was this time last year. He, as you say, it's not all muscle, but the statistics show that he's put himself in contention for pretty much every tournament now with his length. And I do wonder if, while it might look quite simple, you put on muscle and you hit the ball further, how much of it was looking at the statistics and looking at the players who do hit the ball far and how often they get themselves into contention? Because the one other interesting stat from last night is he didn't just lead in distance off the tee. He was the best putter over the 4 days as well. And so many PGA Tour events now are basically just a putting competition. And he may have looked at it and thought, you know what, when Rory McIlroy puts well, he wins. When Dustin Johnson, as he did last week, puts well, he wins. My distance off the tee means that even if I play well and I putt well, I may come up short. Whereas now he bombs it so far. If he has a good week on the green, he's going to be right there, thereabouts. And yeah, he's dividing opinion. He had a little spat with a cameraman as well that didn't go down too well. So the most talked about man in American sport right now, it seems.
There was a brilliant Malachy Clerken quote about him this morning as well, saying he's always come across as a bit of a tosser. It's just now he's a massive one.
Yeah, he gets bad press. I mean, he was criticised for slow play last year and then came out and blamed the caddies for walking too slowly. This was his excuse, which didn't go down brilliantly. But so we'll talk to Paul McGinley this hour. DeChambeau himself is interesting, and then what it means for the sport is interesting. There has been talk for years now about the distance in the game, and it's gone too far. I mean, this is the future is here. The authorities have been warned that this was coming, and now it's here. Like, there was a quote from Rory McIlroy, who was not short off the tee himself a couple of weeks ago at the Heritage Tournament, and he was playing with DeChambeau on the Sunday. And he said, Bryson hit a couple of drives on Sunday that Harry, that's McIlroy's caddy, Harry and I just looked at each other and we were like, holy shit, that was unbelievable. He hit one into the wind on 11. I hit a really good one, probably 315, 320 yards. He must have flown my ball by 40 yards. He hit it like 370, 375 into the wind. It was crazy. It was nuts. It's unbelievable. So the other point now is, will the authorities have to do something about the distance the ball goes?
And, weird happenstance last night, Joe.
Yeah, go on.
Happy Gilmore was on the commentary channel last night, as he was rounding a victory. But like, it's weird that it's taken what 25 years since that movie, or whatever, has been out for an actual Happy Gilmore to come along. I guess the question now is like, how has he maintained that regiment whereby you go away for a while and come back, as you and Nathan mentioned there, with a massive set of traps on you and some huge arms.
And can he avoid injury? That is the one big question mark that anybody who has played golf would look at, putting on that much muscle that quickly. And is it healthy? Can he sustain this? He's played, what, 4 weeks, 5 weeks in a row now in the PGA Tour?
Oh, yeah.
Contended every single week. So can he keep that going on a consistent period with that amount of muscle on him? You expect he's weighed up the benefits and the possible risks that are there and has decided, you know what? This is worth it. This is worth it. And so far it is, but it's if he picks up an injury. Because the worry for golf isn't just the distance. That actually the 19, 20-year-olds coming out go, you know what, this is quite simple to improve myself. It's not time on the range, which I'm sure DeChambeau does as well. It's just bulk myself up. Just get as much muscle as possible. I think we were criticizing Rory McIlroy about 2 years ago for spending a bit too much time in the gym. Just a slightly more sculpted body.
Mm. I know. That is the interesting thing now. Does every 17, 18-year-old going to college on a golf scholarship decide I need to turn into Bryson DeChambeau? So Paul McGinley on the way, 7:30. Text in from Barry. I played a round of golf at the weekend. Off our regular competition tees, we didn't play a single par four that was more than 360 yards. DeChambeau would play our course as a par three. That is not the type of golf I want to watch. It wasn't terrible to watch at the same time. It was kind of thrilling and freakish. But I do take the point that golf played this way could turn into bomb and gouge and just hit a wedge onto every green. Some weekend for the O'Briens, Epsom, Oaks, Derby, French Oaks, completely unsung heroes in the country, Paul and Galway. Well, we will talk to Emmett McNamara, age 30, the Limerick man who won the Derby on Saturday. From Gareth, Reed DeChambeau, his success couldn't happen to a nicer guy. For the avoidance of doubt, I am being sarcastic, says Gareth. So the football weekend that was, Nathan, you and Damon Delaney covered Aston Villa and Liverpool yesterday. Graeme Souness with some interesting comments and Jack Grealish. Generally, the most fouled attribute is a compliment. You know, you think of Ronaldo or an Eden Hazard and they're terrorising defenders and they top the most fouled charts. And this is talked about as, you know, just the havoc they're causing. But in Souness's point, he reckons Grealish isn't seeing the big picture, isn't making decisions quick enough, isn't getting rid of the ball quickly enough, and he would love to get his hands on Jack Grealish. He'd let you get close to him. He said the likes of a Scholes or an Iniesta, who, by the way, are very different players, I would say, to Grealish, but he used them as examples of one-touch, two-touch players that you couldn't get close to. But Grealish would let me get at him, and I'd have no problems playing against him. Grealish did respond today with a tweet, and he had the statistic that he has created the second highest number of chances for fellow players in the league. Only Kevin De Bruyne, playing at a considerably better club, let's be honest, has created more chances than Grealish. It's so I thought it was a very interesting observation on Souness's part. I mean, I suspect there may be something in it, but most people are raising an eyebrow. What do you think?
Well, he picked a good day to do it because they're playing against Liverpool, so it's going to be so hard for Jack Grealish to make any sort of a positive impression. So you watch him and you do question whether he's ready for the step up to a Manchester United or a top four club. He was fouled yesterday 6 or 7 times again, easily fouled. Like, there was no him siding through the Liverpool defence and it was a tactical foul to bring him down. A lot of them where he's tracking back and he just is bundled over and slows play down a little bit. So maybe there is a question there as to can he do more in the right areas of the pitch? Is he picking up soft fouls in and around the halfway line inside his own half that don't really benefit his team? Or is he driving at the opposition and he's causing absolute havoc and he's been brought down and they're scoring a lot of goals from set pieces? I'm sure Souness would love to get near him, but and he does pick up a lot of niggly little injuries, little, you know, goals at his ankles and things like that, but he's playing at a really poor team. That is an incredibly average Aston Villa side, and generally this season he has stood out and he stepped up. He's a young guy. He's tried to bring this team with him, and technically he looks like he has it. He didn't play well yesterday, but by and large, when you see him, his close control is second to none, and he's playing a team that don't get much of the ball. So let's get him that move and then see what he's made of and see if he's fouled quite as often.
I think he's a brilliant player, I have to say. I was surprised Souness didn't rate him. 80 chances, by the way, is the number he has created across his 2,000 and whatever minutes. 80 chances. The net result of that is 7 assists. I mean, if you're Jack Grealish, you're thinking...
Put that statistic to Souness and say, well, what sort of chances are they he's creating? Is he putting them on a plate?
Clearly not. I mean, his teammates are missing 1 in 10. How were Liverpool yesterday?
I sort of went through the motions. I thought, you know, Villa offered nothing, sat back, put plenty of men behind the ball. Liverpool were patient. Probably like quite a lot of Liverpool's performances from the first 3-4 months of the season, where they don't panic now if a team sits back. They know that eventually they'll just wear them down. But this wasn't a stunning display that underlined why they're 23 points clear. It was just a professional performance. And maybe the bigger takeaway is the 3 substitutions he made on the hour mark, where having dropped and left out Henderson, Wijnaldum and Firmino and brought in 3 of the players who've been sort of first subs all season, I didn't think any of them really did anything yesterday to show that they can be a big part. Now, it's one game. Oxlade-Chamberlain, you would expect, will get a lot of game time. It was really poor, gave the ball a lot. Naby Keita, yet to fully convince. And Divock Origi, mentioned it in commentary, has scored so many great goals for Liverpool, so many goals of importance, and still looks like a player who has no real confidence and never quite sure what his role in the team is. So it will raise some of those questions, I'm sure, over the next couple of months as to reinforcements. Some good-looking young players coming through, but is he going to trust those 18, 19-year-olds or 16, 17-year-olds as they are in Harvey Elliott's case next season? You can't imagine them playing 25, 30 games. So do they need something a little bit different?
Very happy to say, as you may have heard there, Gillette sponsoring our news round now. Gillette, we don't just play the game, we change it. Made of what matters. Richie, give us your best news reading, therefore.
Jose Mourinho remains confident that his Tottenham team can still finish inside the Premier League's top 6. Spurs go into tonight's game at home to Everton, 10th in the Premier League. That follows a 3-1 defeat at Sheffield United last week. After that game, Mourinho criticised his team for mentally folding after a goal was taken away from them by VAR. And the Spurs boss, speaking ahead of tonight's game, stands over that criticism.
I cannot coach Michael Oliver. I can coach my players. My job is to coach my players, and I have to admit that is a frustration for me. It was a frustration for me to realize that we should do better than what we did. So again, would be very comfortable for me to be here and smashing the decision and seizing the opportunity to go around that and around and around. I don't want to say that. I think that before that, we should play better than we did. And after that, we should play better than what we did. That's why after the game, I had no problems in praise our opponent, because I thought they deserve more than us.
Team news is in for this one, Joe. Hugo Lloris starts in goal for Spurs. Serge Aurier, Eric Dier, Toby Alderweireld and Ben Davies are their back 4. Harry Winks and Moussa Sissoko are in midfield. In front of them, the trio of Giovanni Lo Celso, Lucas Moura and Heung-Min Son. Harry Kane, unsurprisingly, leads the line for them. For Everton, in goal is Jordan Pickford. Seamus Coleman continues to captain the side from right full. Mason Holgate and Michael Keane are centre-halves, the much sought-after now. Luca Digne is playing left full. Another game for Andre Gomez in midfield alongside Tom Davies, who makes his 100th appearance for Everton. Alex Iwobi and Gylfi Sigurdsson provide the link from midfield to attack. And Richarlison and Dominic Calvert-Lewin start up front for Everton. Kickoff is at 8 o'clock.
We'll keep you to date on that game. The Mourinho thing, I mean, the patterns that you go through seem to be accelerating here. He was swiftly on to criticising the players and saying they lack character and he doesn't know what's wrong with them after the Sheffield United defeat, which was comprehensive. And I'm sure Spurs are... I mean, the wind is just out of the man's sails and has been for some time. I was really surprised when Spurs decided to give him the job. his charm offensive there, what, lasted about a month and a half, Nathan, and then descended back into the gloom?
Yeah, just and the performances. Like, there's nothing there. There's nothing you would look at tactically and say, yeah, Mourinho's doing something a little bit different. He clearly has lost his powers of motivation. What was there when he first arrived at Chelsea, that buzz that he would bring into a dressing room, you'd imagine a lot of those Spurs players were fearful when he came into the dressing room as to when he would turn. And he also took over a squad that were in need of a lot of change, a lot of signings. The money was barely there to start with the crisis we've gone through. It seems as though Spurs have little or nothing to spend right now. And these are the same conversations we had at Manchester United a year in. And then you had at the second spell at Chelsea 18 months in, and you felt there was no way he would turn it round. Like, how does he turn this round? Can you see a situation where he's still there this time next year?
No. This is coming to an end pre-Christmas, I would think. The Walkinstown Beckenbauer has been in touch. Lads, Bryson could be onto something. In the Falklands War, it was the soldiers carrying timber around the midriff who found it easier to hike up the hills as opposed to the skinny lads. And Jerry and Louth, hi lads, big Man City fan. What's going on? Brilliant one week, poor the next. Pep must be going mad over their performances. Can you put this to Pat in the football show? I will, Jerry. I'm curious myself. It's easy to dismiss the Southampton defeat in the context of where the season is for Man City, but that is their ninth defeat this season. It is symptomatic of something that's gone wrong with City. And like, I know, Nathan, a lot of their defeats were put down initially to Laporte's injury, and there's something in that for sure, but there's something not right at City this year. Something a little bit broken there. Nine defeats. To be caught in the hop nine times is far too much. That's more defeats than Arsenal.
And what is it? Seven of them away from home? Yeah, like, people are talking about a rebuilding job for Liverpool. Manchester City have a bit of a rebuilding job as well. It's been covered up by Phil Foden coming through, and Kevin De Bruyne is genius at times. But Gabriel Jesus has never really looked like a replacement for Sergio Aguero. David Silva's leaving the club. Aguero's 32 and very much injury prone at the moment. Fernandinho's 35. And any of the players that have come in defence, either alongside Vincent Kompany or instead of Vincent Kompany, just haven't convinced. And maybe it is the Pep Guardiola, the intensity of the 2 years where they bought into absolutely everything and were just scintillating. And the Liverpool victory last week probably covered up a multitude of sins that was touched on after the game. It could have been 8-3. Mm. Could have been at least conceded three or four goals. And it's been sloppy at times. I've seen them a lot this season, and they don't cover back the way Liverpool cover back. There's no desperation that was there. And you think what they did this time last year to win their final 14 games with Liverpool breathing down their neck, winning every single match, and the intensity that required. They just look soft. You just can't trust them now.
Yeah, and they have a CAS hearing in about 2 weeks' time. Mm. And if a 2-year European ban is upheld, I'm not sure Kevin De Bruyne at 29 is going to stick around. Richie, where are we going next?
The League One playoffs, Joe. The second half of extra time is underway at the moment between Oxford and Portsmouth. Finished 1-1 after 90 minutes at the Kassam Stadium this evening. It's 2-2 on aggregate. It appears as if they're going to penalties. 10 minutes to go in extra time. There, things should be far more straightforward in the other semi-final tonight. Wickham taking a 4-1 lead into their second leg with Joey Barton's Fleetwood at Adams Park, where kickoff is in around about 9 minutes' time. The Premier League, meanwhile, has announced that there have been zero positive results after the latest round of testing for coronavirus. 1,973 people were tested from clubs across the league. Players and staff will continue to be assessed twice a week for the remainder of this season. The Memorial Tournament in Ohio will be played behind closed doors after all. The competition, which gets underway on July 14th, was due to be the first on the PGA Tour to invite back spectators. However, COVID-19 hospitalizations in Ohio have spiked in recent days, leading the Memorial to be played once again behind closed doors. Bryson DeChambeau, as we mentioned, won the Rocket Mortgage Classic at the weekend. The big hitting American finished three shots clear of Matthew Wolff. Seamus Power enjoyed a season's best finish of joint 12th after a level par final round of 72.
He'll be kicking himself, Seamus Power, that is. He's on the Corn Ferry Tour, the second tier tour, and doesn't have full status in the PGA Tour, so this was a rare start for him in the PGA Tour, and he was brilliantly poised to, if not quite win the thing, certainly get a top 10 finish and guarantee himself an invite to next week's tournament and build some momentum and win money and maybe get onto the PGA Tour. I don't know how much you saw of it, Nathan, but last night he certainly missed two putts from about 3 feet, and like it just one of those days, and you don't know why that happens. And in some ways, that's the magic of golf, that you can never run down the clock. You have to keep holding all the putts, and your nerve is tested to the end. Something happened to him last night. He just had a terrible night in the greens.
Yeah, I saw a lot of it last night. I didn't see a lot of Seamus Power. Unfortunately, when you're in that sort of position, you're not that well known. They only seem to show the short misses on the green. But that's been the story of his last 4 or 5 years on the PGA Tour. He's put himself in positions heading into the weekend and just has never fully capitalized. And as you say, a 12th place finish doesn't get you into next week. He'll get the odd start here and there. And so much of his time on tour has been played under this massive stress of battling for his card. You'd love to see him, as you say, get that 2-year exemption and see what he could do then when there's nothing really on his shoulders. But it's this constant scrapping around for invites, scrapping around for a few quid here and there to try and